This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
No, Gabby, get your hooves off me, Gabby. Listen here, it's not happening. It's Hogan's time now. You can whimper all you want, boy, and you ain't playing. The Blues Derby? Hell, I'll think about it.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Villa fans were taunting us. 2-0 after 7 minutes. Scott Hogan again. This could be a bad, bad afternoon.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of MyOldManSaid.com. Joining me, as per usual, celebrating this 100% 2018 in the league, Dan Rogers of the VillaUnderground.com. Welcome. How are you?
Superb. We're back for more. It's the surge now. It's the march towards our inevitable promotion that we've long predicted.
Is this like in like the 1500 meters or the 800 meters? In an 800 meters race, we're about 500 meters in. And are we kicking for home now? Are we just going to be unbeaten to the end of the season?
Yeah, I think we're that competitor who's jockeying for position, aren't we? I suppose is the point you make it. I reckon we do seem to have there's a feel and a bit of a swagger all of a sudden. And after the Forest and Barnsley wins, things are rosy, aren't they? Just at the right time.
Yeah. Even Keith Wyness is telling us old fables about how he almost got Robin Van Persie. I mean, I didn't even know he was still alive, so that was news to me.
I was surprised he was still alive too. And he was probably even more surprised opening the papers to find himself linked to Villa Park, I guess. Is it?
I think that would have given him a heart attack and finished him off there and then. But he's actually 34. I mean, it's all hypothetical now, but I think that if you get him in, it creates that position where, you know, it's Robin Van Persie. He has to play all the time.
But that's the problem.
If he's getting a bit old, you know, what is he, 34 now? And that's the problem. You've got to put him on the team sheet straight away. He's not going to be... I mean, his own ego dictates he's not going to be sitting on the bench just waiting to fill in for Scott Hogan occasionally.
No, I can't. I think that's the kind of risk with that. I think if the circumstances were different with Hogan, perhaps I think we might have had a thought about it. The other thing about it is that it's well publicised now that we are not doing very well in terms of wage bill, so... Do we really need to be throwing massive money at one man who would be a gamble as well?
That was just a nice little name drop by Wyness. I think that's what it is. So what have you been up to in between Villa winning all the time?
Caught a bit of the cricket in the silly hours, but mostly very, very busy with some work stuff. But nice distraction has been Villa. Nice distraction.
Have you watched Black Mirror? I've just finished Black Mirror this week. Finally finished Black Mirror.
It's super.
I mean, I'm hoping the whole Villa run will not turn into some kind of Black Mirror episode. where we're told that we're getting 5G internet reception around Villa Park, and we're told we're going to get a new North Stand, and we're going to get all these new players in, new pies with real meat, and then suddenly we don't get promoted. And that's the twist. And we go back to the Dark Ages. It's like the Industrial Revolution never happened again.
And you'll wake up suddenly, and we lose, praying for a draw at Southampton on a Monday night.
No floodlights at Villa Park anymore. It just turns into a nightmare where we can't afford anything. But no, which were your favourite Black Mirror episodes of the fourth season?
Oh, I like the USS Callister episode, I have to admit. In the virtual reality world. In the game world, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, no, I thought that was good. Black Museum, I thought was pretty good, mm-hmm. The last one. And good. Actually, the kids' surveillance one was pretty good, where they put the probe in the kid's head.
Yes, and she ends up watching it.
And then also the murder one, where they knock that cyclist off.
Oh, yes. All very dark.
Very dark, very good. Anyway, that's enough of plugging Black Mirror. I wish they would sponsor this show. Charlie Brooker should write this show. I think we do a good job as it is, just improvising it at the moment.
It's certainly as surreal as some of the stuff he writes.
Yeah, but I think we're pretty surreal on this show as well at times. Anyway, coming up in the show, first of all, we'll do the 3 points, which include an old friend of ours coming back into the spotlight. We also look at whether Villa should bother with the cups, and does our attitude to them suck a little bit. And then, of course, it's the overall look at our fourth win. Well, third win as well against Forest, and the win against Barnsley most recently. And we end the show answering a few questions before the clock strikes 12. 3 points. Paul Lambert is back in the Premier League. It's like we can't rotate Allardyce anymore. We can't rotate David Moyes. We can't rotate Alan Pardew. He's got a job. Oh, shit, Roy Hodgson's just had a job. What's on the second page of the list? Paul Lambert...
It's the kind of appointment that if you're a Stoke fan, that how do you get excited? And I know there are some fans at Villa who say Paul Lambert was hard done to and blah, blah, blah. But he had plenty of time and resource for me that didn't do great.
And let's not forget he's had a stint at Wolves, and he didn't exactly set them on fire, and their owners decided that it was time to let go, and look what's happened post Lambert to them.
Mm.
What's happened post Lambert to them is it's a load better than what happened to us after he left.
No, I think it's a negative, hopeless appointment really for Stoke. You know, he might have them scrappling around the bottom, but I always thought Lambert was had a confused style of play, and nothing sexy or good will come long term of having him in charge.
No, I mean, they won the first game, but I think Huddersfield, who they beat at home, are in a bit of a free fall.
I mean, a slightly small other Villa connection there is as well. I bet he didn't expect his first week having to fend off advances for Peter Crouch from Chelsea. That's quite an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, although Stephen Ireland must have dropped to number two when he saw Lambert.
He's been cryogenic freezer for years, thinking, finally, my time is here.
He had a long-term injury, Stephen Ireland.
Yes, it was an injury to his pride, wasn't it, after his 15th grandmother died.
But seriously speaking, he had a long-term injury, got his first game back, and who's watching him but Paul Lambert, about to be the new Stoke manager. So that's a little side plot there, which is quite funny. Point number two. There was a lot of talk about Manchester City would potentially go through the season unbeaten, but Liverpool obviously put the kibosh on that. But in terms of Villa being 100%, do you think they'll go unbeaten for the rest of the season?
I think we have the capacity to go, I think, on long winning runs. I mean, we'll talk about this a bit later. I think we do have the ability to concede goals, and we do give teams opportunities. But the telling thing will be that we've got this, it's the top eight, isn't it, coming to Villa Park. And we're very strong at Villa Park, and I think that's where my optimism comes from, actually, looking across the fixtures. I think we've got a tricky run in at the end of the season, but there's a possibility that we could do very well between now and the end of term.
Currently, we have the third best home record.
Mm.
1-8, drawn 5, lost 1. Only 3 points off what Wolves have achieved, and they've got the best home record. But as you say, the flip side is we haven't actually played most of the promotion contenders at Villa Park. So that could be the reason why, but at the same time, you can only beat what's in front of you. And when Bristol, who are obviously one of the chief, well, currently one of the chief contenders, we actually made short work of them. Derby drew 0-0. We beat them 5-0. So there's good signs there. Point number three was the passing of Cyril Regis. At a very young age of 59, so it was a bit of a surprise because he's always been somebody who has always been a strapping lad when he played, and he was still in good nick in his 50s. Yeah. The thing about Regis, I always saw him as... he played for Villa for two seasons, but, I mean, his glory days and his reputation, you know, was made at West Brom and Coventry. So I've always seen him as their player without trying to, you know, put some ownership on it. And he was very much a transitional striker when he came to Villa Park. I actually remember being, because he was early 30s, and it was a free transfer, so it was no big deal. It was underwhelming. And you thought, oh, is that it, Big Ron? Come on. But it was, at that time... It was Big Ron just building a squad with, you know, what he could get on the cheap, as well as buying half the Liverpool team as well. I mean, from the get-go, he performed very well, Regis. I mean, he got into double figures for the season. I think it was on 11. Dwight York hit 11 as well, so he was joint top scorer. Mm. But he did a great job. But I think his legacy is coming through at a time of... How many? I mean, there wasn't that many black players in the, you know, late 70s, and the whole West Brom thing. Funny enough, managed by Ron Atkinson, who gets a lot of stick for a certain comment he made, but he was the man who brought, you know, Brendan Batson and Laurie Cunningham and Cyril Regis through, and, you know, they were obviously known as the Three Degrees then, and this is in the time where, you know, you have, like, the British movement, which is like the British First Movement and the National Front, marching against immigrants, which... I don't think much has changed, really, has it? But there'd be like headlines in their papers like race invaders, and then, you know, slogans like pull the trigger, shoot the N-word. It was a very toxic time. And, you know, Regis was one of those people who paved the way and made other black players feel like it was possible. And he's held in great esteem by so many fellow players even today. And rightly played for England at a time where playing for England actually was an achievement.
Yeah, absolutely.
So may he rest in peace.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony. January 8th. It's fine that everyone made mistakes. However, I agreed we still need to work harder to improve, step by step, closer to our targets. Right now, I have to admit it's still a piece of business far away from my expectations. January 11th. Actually, I was sorry for fans to the cup game because it was the only game I didn't really pay any attention to, though I think players should put 100% to every game. It is in time wake-up call. January 11th. Wolves didn't need spend much but get loan players due to M connection. No other clubs can get player like Hota playing in Championship, and with a very low wage too. January 11th, I'm confident we have turned round club from very serious crisis and improved a lot, though it's still far away from our long-term target. We'll get there sooner or later. Being negative all time doesn't help anything. Stand together to unify and culture. Hashtag OTV.
Right, talking about resting in peace, Aston Villa's FA Cup campaign shot down very quickly.
Yep.
I mean, I went to the game and, you know, you look at the lineup on face value, it seemed like a decent team and good enough to win the job. But then when you look at it, it's like Andre Green, who's his first game back. It's John Terry's first game back, both, you know, after long-term out. So they're going to be treading a bit gingerly. Then you've got a few younger players in there, and suddenly you're playing Bree at centre-back.
Centre-half, yeah, it was not a good plan.
And you're thinking, actually, this doesn't break down to a team that is good enough to, you know, take on a spirited team that are obviously got nothing to lose, and they're only a division below, and they'll come at us. And, you know, they could have battered us if it wasn't for some poor finishing and Jed Steer making a save or two.
Well, Jed Steer made four or five great saves across the game and did nothing to remind us that he's probably an able understudy for Johnston. I thought there was some glaring things on the day. I thought the centre-half picking of Bree was a calamity. I thought a couple of individual players had particularly poor games, and it's interesting how the picking and the picking of the side's gone since. Taylor's chronic loss of form, you know, was reiterated. I thought he really struggled. Bjarnason in the left position was a disaster. That was poor. He had a horrendous miss as well at a crucial part of the game. And it underlined, I think, how Davis has faded through loss of form and fatigue too. I thought, though he got his goal, didn't do much else.
I think it was, yeah, that, I mean, we don't want to dwell on the game, but...
It emphasised a few things, didn't it, I thought. And I think one of the points to pick up on him was O'Hare as well, because it was a great opportunity to have a good look at him against combative, you know, it was a competitive game, isn't it? And, you know, you see the nice flicks, the nice runs. He made our midfield so, so light. And it was kind of like a rewind to when Grealish was sort of bursting onto the scene, if you like. Another diminutive midfielders that you get a reminder that it's a bit of a luxury, and you can sometimes get a bit beguiled by the promise and the exuberance, I think, of a youth player, and it sort of winds you back in when you see them up against, as I say, combative opposition who've got something riding on the game.
Yeah, and you know, all these people calling for O'Hare to play in the first team, well, he's actually behind Grealish because he's not going to play anywhere else in the team, and he's not going to play in the same team alongside Grealish. And Josh Anomar, who I think has shown that he has more than O'Hare at, you know, in terms of having the experience, but
the physicality too, I think.
Obviously, he's been playing hot and cold. But anyway, the reason I mentioned the FA Cup game more so was, what do you think Villa's attitude to such games should be? Because obviously they're getting a crowd in, and people are paying 15 quid, or season ticket holders were paying 10 quid to come along. Some people going for their first game ever, especially kids, because it was kids for a quid.
Well, I took my son for the first time. For the game and taking advantage of that pound ticket. Yeah.
So he's not supporting Villa ever again, is he?
Yeah, so he's now asked for to become a posh season ticket holder, so we have to drive down there every weekend now. it's a funny one for me. I'm very much in the camp of, I think that we should be, especially at these sorts of rounds, trying to progress through, because, you know, the modern positive experiences of a Villa fan have, to be honest, probably been in the cup. You know, my real fond memories for me was the 93-94 victory against Man United at the old Wembley.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a good win against a good Man United team. And the Leeds
victory. And the semi-final
Liverpool.
Against Tranmere
too. Yeah. These are fantastic.
And then you obviously
things.
beat Leeds 2 years later. I mean, these are obviously the League Cup. But also, imagine supporting Villa the last 5 years if we hadn't gone to Wembley in 2015.
Which was a point I was just going to come to, really, because that was in the midst of a massive malaise, and no one really, you know, no one put anything on us to go to Wembley and beat Liverpool in the fashion that we did. And it was a temporary lift, and to be honest, it carried us through the rest of that season to probably surviving. Yeah. But the point is that I think, yes, it's a devalued competition, but it's a competition that, you know, we might not win it. And to be honest, ultimately in the final rounds, that the bigger clubs tend to, you know, hoover up the silverware. But we have a chance.
Villa have won cups from lower divisions before. I mean, you just have to go back to Ron Saunders. But the thing is also, you've got these big squads now. And I thought Villa would have benefited from going through a few rounds at least.
Yes.
And so players like Bjarnason and Elphick should have played in that game. I'm sorry, but him, you know, Terry needs a bit of a nurse on his first game back, and Elphick and Terry, that would have been a better option.
I was surprised we risked Terry in that game, I have to admit. Not, I get the idea around, you know, match sharpness and match fitness and all that sort of stuff, but
that's what I'm saying. Play a proper centre back alongside him. You know, you don't put him in on his return and then put Bree, who doesn't play that position properly.
I thought that was bizarre, to be honest. I mean, there's two final things I'd say on this, and, you know, I'm happy to draw a line under it, really. I think the one thing is that people will often go, well, our absolute priority is promotion. Well, I think it is, but I think it misses the point that you can build momentum, you can play players back into form, you know, and it puts a good thing around the club, like the FA Cup run of 2015 did.
Yeah, it all feeds into each other.
It does. It changed the narrative, and I don't like the word because it's a Tom Fox word. And the other thing about it, and this was the one bit that really, for the first time, obviously taking my son as a five-year-old, you know, it was a big, big thing for him, and there was over 20,000 people there, and I didn't sit in the Halton that day. I shifted to upstairs in the Doug Ellis. Loads of kids.
Ooh,
I know, so I know.
I shifted to the Trinity.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, I'd never sat in the upper Doug, and to be honest, we'd left it quite late, and I'd ummed and ahed because he's only five, so I thought, well, do you know, we'll just decamp for this game, see how it goes. I couldn't believe how many kids, and by kids I mean probably five up to maybe, you know, early teens. And I think the club misses a trick on those sorts of days, really, that you put a half-decent performance up against these sort of teams, you'll turn them over. Put a really strong team out, and I think, you know, without being arrogant, I think you know, here we're playing against, you know, look, here we played against Barnsley and Forest, we'd have walked the game. And
well, I think we'd have won
my
it.
My memory of being a young Villa fan was that, you know, we weren't winning European Cups, but we were, I think, as we've said before, we were competitive. We played some good football. We scored some good goals. And that's what your colours to the mast, isn't it? That how many kids walked away sort of nonplussed by what they'd seen, and, you know, it's, you know, a bit of a mistrick.
You know, back in the day, let's say Villa, you know, when they won the league with 14 players, they still went for the games in the cup. I mean, when they get beat, you go, oh, well. But it's, you know, you've got a squad of 14 players. So in hindsight, you think, well, you know, it's not going to hurt us not to stay in the cup. But when you've got a squad as big as Villa and you need these players that we buy, they don't get games. And then when they get their 20 minutes and they're not, you know, on it, they get absolutely, you know, berated on social media.
Well, Hogan's a good example, isn't it?
Yeah, they get berated on social media by fans, Bjarnason, Hogan, and then you wonder why. It's because, you know, they don't get a chance to get into the groove. So there's the benefits there, that we could have fielded a strong enough team to get through the cup, and, you know, away you go. Going back to what I was saying, you have a go, and I think it's just this narrative, to mention that word again, where people are just, because it sounds clever, like, oh yeah, we're resting players for this, and fans have bought into this now, that you have to rest your players. And there's players who are being rested, and they're getting paid a lot of money, but they're being rested and they're not actually playing in the first team as well. So it's just permanent vacation. And it's there's not that real excuse of concentrating on the league. It's because that's presuming that you're going to get promotion. I mean, we've seen it before where Martin O'Neill concentrated on the league when we're in Europe. And what are you playing in the league for? To get into bloody Europe. So when you're in Europe, why are you throwing it away? Are we just running a business here and making sure we're turning over and making some money?
There was a lot of people at Villa Park for the Peterborough game. And you know, you can see the appetite for Villa over the following two games as well. You know, big away following at Forest and a really good attendance against Barnsley. So, you know, the appetite's there, but it was a bit of a strange one. I think I'll underline it again by saying I think we missed a bit of a trick. You know, imagining we were in the hat for the next round, it just makes it something else a bit more interesting, and to, you know, rotate that middle third of the squad. I don't have any issue with that. And then they can play into the team.
And we have a tradition in the cups as well. And there's not much else we can win. I mean, we're in the league where we're 12 points off the top, and all we can get is, you know, second place at this juncture anyway. Moving on to how we're doing in the league. So far, after a dodgy December, it's now four wins on the trot and potential more. I think we scored 10 goals in four games, conceded only the one, and that was a bit of a howler. That was a free goal they gave away off that corner. And 12 out of 12 points. But let's start with Hogan.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought his finishing, and we've spoken about it previously on the show, technically he's a great finisher. He's a great header of the ball, even though he's not, you know, not the tallest. And he demonstrated his opportunism in, 7 minutes.
Really good. I'll be the first to admit, I mean, we talked very positively about Hogan when he joined. I think we were fair in our observations around, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we took the view that he started well with these positive runs. We weren't really servicing him.
I think we were a little dubious about the signing from the point of how much we paid for him. And his injury record, just to
Correct. That's correct. But I think that we could see how, you know, we were trying to inject goals into the squad at that point, weren't we? But I think we quite early picked up on the fact that he wasn't getting fed in those channels like he was at Brentford, and the service in the air was poor, if any. And then he stopped doing the things that he was doing well. And I think, but it was interesting, that interview on or after the Middlesbrough game, I think it was, that he was very honest, I think, about perhaps his own head had dropped. And I think the fact over the last three games he's put four good goals away, and the manner of those goals, you know, the first against Barnsley was a fantastic ball across the box for him to prod home, but he had a lot to do. The header that he wins for the second goal just moments later from a Snodgrass assist is superb.
It was in a crowded area as
great
well.
Header. I mean, that shows you that it's not a height issue. And the goal that was scored, I thought, against Forest, that fantastic, I mean, it was almost undefendable cross from some Snodgrass. But that movement in between the defender and the goalkeeper, they had no chance. And it was hugely positive, actually, from my point of view. And his finishing is something, if we can keep doing what we're doing, And servicing him, I think that we could really have an asset there.
Well, that is the key, and there's been a lot of talk that it's the new coach, Steve Agnew, who used to work with Bruce, that he's had one-on-ones with all the strikers, and obviously he's concentrating on the forward play, and now Calderwood can just concentrate directly on the defensive side of things. But you know, as you said, it's the deliveries have improved, the quality has improved, and they seem to know where they're on the same wavelength now, and they didn't used to be.
Well, something I noticed at the weekend as well, and it's interesting because I think the crowd, I think previously, if you know, when you see a through ball or a channel played, and it's, you think, oh, that's just up, you know, hopeful, or, you know, a bit of a wayward pass. But we were playing a clever, and Al Mohammadi did it, must have been six or seven times, to the point where, I turned to the person next to me and said,
like a deep ball.
Yeah, it was like a deep curling ball, just trying to either, you know, put it a foot over the defender's head or in the gap in between the fullback and the centre half, you know, just where Hogan's lurking. And I thought,
he likes to play off the shoulder a bit, and we haven't really utilised that.
And it did a couple of things. It didn't really come off in terms of Hogan getting a break, but what it did was the ball would often break into the middle third of the pitch, and time and time again, Bjarnason or Grealish would pick that ball up, or Al Mohammadi would pick it up again. It was a bit more thoughtful. Do you know what I mean? It was like, right, we've got Hogan. What are his strengths? Let's play to them. Something we've been saying for best part of a year, really. Why buy a player and then play, lump it up chin height at him? You know, actually, how was this guy scoring loads and loads of goals at Brentford? And let's replicate it. Good, really positive.
Well, the funny thing is, and this has become one of my little side projects almost, is looking at how many touches Scott Hogan has every game. The amazing fact is, because normally what I've put out the odd tweet where somebody will come on for like as a substitute for the last 10 minutes.
It was Hepburn Murphy, wasn't it, in one of the games?
Yeah, Hepburn Murphy came on, I think, for 12 minutes or 10 minutes. Yeah, and he actually had more touches than Hogan did in 80 minutes. Like, he had 14 touches to Hogan's 12 or something like this. Well, game against Barnsley, I thought, oh, I'm curious. You know, Hogan scored two goals. He should have had a hat-trick, hit the post. How many touches did he have? 12.
That's remarkable, isn't it? It's absolutely remarkable.
And he played the whole game.
Yeah. I have to say, the second half, he didn't have a sniff apart from the one he hammered off the upright, did he? But
so, you know, there's after 7 minutes, Bruce should have pulled him off.
That's job done, boss. Job done,
mate. Scored my first two touches. I've only got about 10 left, so...
I tell you, it's interesting because you wouldn't pick that number, would you? If someone said to you, right, you know,
Anomar came on. I think he had 13 minutes. Came on for 13 minutes, and he had 14 touches. He had more touches than Hogan in 90 minutes.
I mean, that says a lot, doesn't it? It does say a lot.
And in my match ratings, I gave Hogan man of the match. You know, it's him or Grealish, really. But when you're sticking two goals away in 7 minutes, you've pretty much wrapped it up and could have scored a hat-trick. But then you look back and you go, I've just given somebody man of the match who's just had 12 touches.
It was a flawless 12 touches. It's kind of like, I don't know. It's perfection, isn't it? I don't need to touch the ball. I will touch the ball
job,
when
I
choose.
But I love it. That's his job. His job. And now what he's been told to, I'm assuming this, is to play in the fucking 6-yard box. Be that striker. Be the fox in the box. And that's all he's there for. So as long as he gets two or three of those touches are actual chances and he sticks one or two away, it's job done. You can't complain. But I'm so desperate to do a little graph at the end of the season. Hogan's touches.
Well, he might. That's a really good one. You might get to the end of the season and he's probably like, what's it, 10 touches a game? I mean, we're talking about 420 touches or something.
No, he's got it down to 5 touches a game, but he's scoring a hat trick every time. It's how he doesn't get injured.
That's the one thing.
As long as most of my touches end up in the back of the net, that means I don't have to do anything for the rest of the game. So that frees me from any potential injuries.
Yes.
That could be the overall plan here with Hogan.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Somebody else who's had a rough deal, especially from you, I would say, is old Birka Bjarnason, who I've always championed, A, because of his long, flowing blonde locks, and B, because he's... He's decent for Iceland, and he just seemed to be a decent player, and he could see he was getting in positions, but you know, a bit like Hogan, he made the runs, but sometimes the delivery wasn't always there for him. But again, it's one of those Brucey bonuses, literally a Brucey bonus. First of all, he's had Albert Adomar come up as a Brucey bonus, playing an out of position role. He's had Alan Hutton as a left back as a Brucey bonus.
Well, yeah, Davis, didn't he? Who
Kieran Davis is a Brucey bonus. You know, he was only selected because there was no other strikers fit. And so here we are again, because Bruce has to play a DM and puts Bjarnason on for the second half against Forest, and it comes up trumps, and he can't really bring in, a half-fit Whelan in top of him. So Bjarnason put in another good shift, I thought, against Barnsley.
Yeah. I mean, I try to call it, you know, it is opinion from me, and a lot of the time... I hadn't seen much in the way of long term promise from Bjarnason until the last couple of weeks. Really, there'd been some suggestions here and there when he first started, but I think he'd suffered badly for not really having a defined role, and he was very much the utility man across the midfield and even left back at times for Villa. And I thought, you know, you personally, I didn't draw my conclusions from that because I thought that was unfair. My concern with Bjarnason today had been kind of how some people feel around Whelan, really, that. The silly mistakes that professional footballers shouldn't be making, you know, the giving the ball away cheaply, the poor control. It doesn't really matter what position you're playing. However, I do think the last couple of games, does this coincide with the change in the team's ethos? Is that to do with the coaching? Because I thought he looked very much more comfortable in that defensive midfield role. And as you say, you know,
when he came on against Bristol on the left hand side, I thought he was really good as well, because he had this license to maraud through the rest of the midfield, and obviously he scored as well. And you know, that is a good litmus test. He was clean through, and not many Villa players coolly slots that away. I mean, you wouldn't put your money on Gabby, would you, for example?
No, you wouldn't. And I think that was the first time, and you know, the first time I think there was perhaps some positivity in my match ratings, because it was the first thing that mirrored what I'd seen him do for Iceland in a couple of games that I'd watched him. You know, I can't say I've seen him one game outside the Euros, and I'm not a fan of judging players based on their international form, because you know, we've bought plenty of players off the back of a Euros or a World Cup, and they've been a bit and that's why I'm going to focus on the couple of games, because we've had a really good look at him. And against Barnsley particularly, he put his foot in, a fantastic engine, the Villa engine, yeah. At the middle of the pitch.
Maybe he is the Villa engine. They've suddenly found it.
And to be honest, he's I've been impressed with the physicality that he's put in. That, you know, he was on the end of a really nasty elbow against Nottingham Forest that went largely unpunished, and he had a similar clash against Barnsley as well.
He's a Viking, Dan. He's a Viking.
He is, and I think it's a really positive thing. I'm not in the business of and this is where I stand up for the likes of Whelan and things going. He's shit. He must never play again for Aston Villa. I'm delighted that there's a bit of a rehabilitation going on before our eyes, because he looked great over the last 180 minutes of football, and that's that can only be good for us.
Yeah, I think the main difference in the Villa setup, though, is man like Grealish, who is really conducting the team now, and he seems to have. I don't know. There was hints. I think he's mentally been sat down, and I don't know. Maybe he has been sat down.
Maybe he's
seeing a sports therapist or something, because he has this. because he has this mentality now. Which I mean, you would have noticed against Barnsley, he actually had mud on his shorts.
Yeah.
And he's really getting stuck in, and also he made sure the ref had mud on his shorts as well, which was, if you haven't seen it yet, it's worth, I think I've put it up on Twitter, it's basically he goes off on a run and plays
steam
a 1-2, and the ref's in the way, so he just pushes the ref out of the way. The ref's thinking, what am I going to do? And just sees that, I think he could have booked him then, just to really been a cunt.
Sent him off.
But no, he's been really positive. I mean, the third goal against Barnsley, that was vintage Grealish. That's what he does. Defenders, there's one thing they don't like, and that's people running at them. And if
especially
you're running
into
at
the box.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we spoke at the outset of the season, really, and it was a real bad look that he got that horrible kidney injury that he did in at the beginning of the season. But I think we'd said that this has to be the defining season for the mature Jack Grealish, doesn't it? Because if he's not going to do it at this level with Villa now, when's he going to do it?
Yeah, because there was this big question mark over his head. Is he just hype and he's a kind of an okay player who can like flit here and there like he did in the semi-final of the FA Cup? Or is he somebody who can play for 90 minutes and really be the boss man and give your whole team a complete different dimension, because he's running the show? And once he's running the show like that, suddenly Hourihan's got an ally.
Yeah.
Albert Adoma's got an ally. And suddenly Hogan also has more movements behind him that's going to set him up.
It's made us much more threatening, hasn't it, through the middle, and that's something we've lacked for a while.
And unpredictable as well.
Yeah. Well, that's something, again, this will be no surprise to people who've listened to the podcast for a while. I'm a huge advocate of having some spontaneity, and it's where my criticism of managers like Lambert come from, really, that you set up in a certain way and you try to play so disciplined and rigid. You're so easy to set up against, in my view, that you get players like a Grealish and a Hourihan to some extent, I think, playing well then and doing their own thing, within team orders, but actually saying when you've got the ball, you've got free rein to try and hurt the opposition. That's very hard to defend against. Another player who does it, and it might seem strange because of the position he plays, Hutton carries the ball often forward out of fullback into either a left or a slightly off left central position. And that causes disarray because you're an extra man appearing in amongst players who are thinking, bloody hell, I'm trying to mark the midfielder and yet I've got someone marauding forward.
It's like he's got weights in his right boot because he always drifts in into the centre, doesn't he?
But it's a great thing. And to be honest, Elmo Hamidi does it very well as well. Elmo will often carry the ball forward and he'll interchange the player. I noticed actually quite a lot with Grealish at the weekend and Snodgrass, and be almost like, you've got two options to put the ball in then, and through Snodgrass and Elmo Hamidi, two players who can genuinely deliver a football into the box as well.
Yeah.
And for the first time, picking up and linking it back into what you said about Grealish, we can threaten teams and with some spontaneity as well. We're not rigid. We're not hoping that, Codger will pick up the ball and run 40 yards and score a goal for us, or, years previously, Benteke. We carry threat across the midfield, and it's no surprise to me that now Grealish is ticking and we've got a player like that, as you say, that we're starting to score goals, and I think against Forest and Barnsley we've looked dangerous.
Yeah, and the next game's a few days off, actually.
Yep.
Depending on when you listen to the show, and I think that's I looked at kind of key games. I think the first one is the upcoming Sheffield United, the trip to Sheffield United, because if we win that, because you would say that's a difficult game in the context of the Championship, then there's double back-to-back home games against Burton and Birmingham, who are obviously both in the bottom three. So
great opportunity.
You're suddenly on a seven game winning run, which that should claw back the automatic promotion spot. But anyway, we'll talk more. We might sneak another show in before that game to talk about the future and how the season may pan out. If you're listening to the show on iTunes or Apple, please do give us a review, preferably 5 stars, and then write whatever you want. We now have a few listener questions. Ben Hipkiss says, and by the way, he prefaces this by saying he's not a Bruce hater. He has his full support this season. Bruce has asked around with the team over the last 15 months, making some ridiculous picks. Bakuna starting the season, for example. Numerous players played out of position, players bought but hardly played, etc. What does this podcast believe to be our best 11? We really need a settled side for these last 4 months. So who is certain to be on the team sheet? Do we really need to sign anyone else this transfer window? I think we'll go through the 11. I think you have to, in terms of defence, keeper, Johnson is in. Mm. Would you go Elmo right back?
On current form, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, Chester Terry takes care of itself. Hutton or Taylor?
On form, Hutton. And that's not something I thought I'd hear myself saying six, 9 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm not that bothered. I think either or. Because if Taylor, once he gets a few games under his belt, he starts to get a bit braver and goes forward. But at the moment, Hutton really isn't doing anything wrong. And
nope.
With Grealish and Hourihane and Adomar all linking up on the left, they don't really need a natural left-footed left-back to really get involved there anyway. So that leads to the midfield.
Mm.
Would you go for this 4-1-1?
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of having someone playing off. I think it gives you the... I think it allows you to actually stay quite solid in the midfield.
I'll just rephrase that. The four, it's 4-1-4-1.
Yeah.
Or 4-1-3-1-1. So if we're using a DM, are we playing with a designated DM? And if so, who's your man?
This is where the best 11 thing starts to fall apart, because I think that we've now got an advantage that we've probably got three players who can sit in that defensive midfield role. We've got a couple of issues. Jedinak appears to have repeatedly be suffering chronic injuries. I mean, if the thigh injuries, it's a tear. So I think we're waiting to see whether it needs surgery or whatnot.
It's getting a bit boring with Jedinak, to be honest.
Well, this is why I think that if we get up this season, it will be because of our squad depth. You know, if we can interchange players like Jedinak, Wheel and Bjarnason in that role, well, that's got to put us ahead of other teams in a similar position.
Oh yeah, no, without a doubt. But if you have to pick one, you feel like if Villa are 1-0 up and it's the last 10 minutes, you're feeling safer if it's Jedinak in that defensive midfield spot.
Oh yeah, oh absolutely. But I mean, his history and his experience and the fact that he captains Australia makes him the number one pick, but is he going to be fit is the question.
Yeah, so then that boils it down to Bjarnason or Whelan.
Well, on current form, Bjarnason is just nudging it, which again it might be a shock to some people. I mean, I've got to take this point to clarify.
You just go with the fashion, you do, Dan. You just go with the current fashion.
Well, it would be unfashionable for, and it would be erroneous of me to suggest that on current form, Whelan was a better player. Personally, you know, having watched a lot of him play for Ireland, and I do think he, for the purpose that he serves, and people do need to look back at some of the games where he's put his foot in and he's bled for the cause, and he's made some two or three bad. When he makes a mistake, it's hurt us. It's hurt us, and I think that's reflected really badly on for a player, I think, who plays with his heart on his sleeve, and I think is a really hard worker.
Whatever. Just get to the point. I mean, there's also the option, and I don't know how legit this is. Maybe he will sign tomorrow and he'll already be in a Villa shirt. The Manchester United player, Axel, and I can't even pronounce his name, Junzebi. Have you got any...
Sounds good to me.
Pogba's mate, who can apparently play centre-back or defensive midfielder, but, you know, I don't know... If you suddenly get him in, and the only reason he's coming is to play games, and we've just talked about three potential players we have. Although if Jedinak is out long term, then obviously that's just a Jedinak replacement. In the same way that, you know, if we got a striker in, that would just be like for Kodja.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't see Villa forking out or getting in anybody who's going to force his way into the first team.
No, and I don't know how it works in terms of loans either. You know, is there some, you know, like a onoma really, that there's an expectation on the parent club that some game time will be had? I don't know. I don't see, you know, if Terry and Chester stay fit, I don't see anyone forcing their way through. And the reality is that Elphick and Samba would be ahead in the pecking order.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that some, you know, hotshot from Man United might not force his way into contention as third and fourth spot, but the merits of it, I don't know.
I mean, it's kind of, it doesn't need to happen.
It doesn't, does it? No. It's kind of like the Van Persie discussion with Hogan, that we should have enough.
Just to complete the best 11, so I think Grealish, Snodgrass, Adoma, Hourihane, they're all in.
Yeah.
And then at the moment it's Hogan.
Yeah, I agree. Because if honestly, players like Lansbury haven't, aren't knocking on the door for me, and stuff like that. I don't see that.
No, I mean he's good. He's good to have in, as luxury in the squad. He's just one of the people that makes the bench strong. Mm. So to the answer to the question, I've just maintained we don't really need anybody in the transfer window bar cover for Codger.
I mean, just to finish off Ben's point, really, that he's saying we're going to see a settled side. I think we're starting to see a settled group of players, but we've got the benefit that there are players around the periphery who can swap in quite naturally now. And we're not in the position that we are last January, are we, where we were looking at the squad thinking, crikey, we need to make some swift changes here. We really go and spend 80 million quid or whatever it was. And that's a good position to be in.
So that's answered that. Another question, there was one question about, are we right not to be bothered with the FA Cup, which we've kind of answered, I think you agreed as well that we should be taking cups seriously.
I think we absolutely should be.
Another question, Richard Morrell says, the ladies team, why?
This is a tricky one.
Why not?
Yes, why not?
I mean, ladies teams, if you go to America, for example, you go down to college level and you're talking about when you're younger at school, the girls' games is big. It's bigger than the guys' game because most blokes are playing American football or basketball or baseball or whatever. The ladies' game of choice is soccer, and that's why the Americans have been better historically in World Cups and what have you. But I mean, the question of why? I mean, that's you shouldn't even have to ask that fucking question.
Sit on the fence, David.
The only problem is the interest in the game, which is something. Which is a problem because you can't just say suddenly, because you support Aston Villa for 100 years, you suddenly have to go to the ladies' games. Because to me, it's like another team.
I think that's the point with ladies' football for me. I'm not, I support it in the sense that I have nothing against it. Do I have an interest in it? No. But the fact that there were thousands and thousands of people at Wembley watching the ladies' FA Cup final tells me that there's an interest in a demographic for it. So,
and it's something that will only build because it has been in the shadows. But it's something, these things don't happen overnight. And it's something, there's a lot more influx of female football journalists feeding into the game, and they obviously show more interest in the ladies' game, so it does broaden it out and will only help increase the actual interest over time. And who knows, because football's getting more sterile and people may look for alternatives, because I think people who go and see Aston Villa's ladies team, for example, have a lot of fun because it's a lot more kind of grassroots.
I think the other comparison I draw is just slightly off tangent, is that, and on that subject of sterility, is particularly in our relegation season, our first season down, was the growth in interest in following under 23 football, and the benefit of that. You don't necessarily have to go to the games, but I was surprised when we went, and I know you've been to a few more than me, of actually how many people do bother to turn out for those things, Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at Villa Park. It's not under-supported. And you look online on social media and things like that, there is an interest there that perhaps I don't remember there being an interest there even maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, if you like football in any shape or form, then, like, for example, when I used to live in Brighton, I used to sometimes go to watch Lewis at the Dripping Pan, which has a bar behind the goal. And you can actually stand at the bar and watch the game through the window.
Wow. That's a fantastic way to watch football.
Then you can take your pint out on the terrace, and it's all like Harvey's and the local ales there. It's not like fucking Carling or Carlsberg or any of that watered down shite. So you're standing on the terraces, and you can wander around, and it's like you don't get all this bullshit, and you get this same attitude at the ladies' games. You can turn up at it's very similar grounds that they play on, unless they're hosting like a one-off at Villa Park, and you get to have that proper experience of having a drink, watching the game as it used to be, and that can be more appealing than going to a Premier League or Championship stadium where you have to queue up for hours to get a pie and a pint of piss. and you miss most of the game anyway, and then there's people leaving with 5-10 minutes to go. And
when we were in our relegation season, on the odd weeks, on the off weeks when Villa are away and stuff, I'd sometimes go down to Hensford and Keys Park, and you sort of get that reminder, don't you, that professional football's at the top level. Yeah, you've got your world class players and stuff like that, but dripping down, there's not much difference sometimes between your average footballers, to be honest. And it reminded me that, it grounds you, doesn't it? I think, and you get there and you get in amongst it, and you strip away all the corporate bollocks. And there is a lot of corporate bollocks, even at Villa's level at the moment. You see it now, especially with social media. You actually get there and you watch a game of football, and like you say, you wander out the pubs immediately outside the ground, or you don't have to queue for hours and hours to get away because it's a very uber local club. It sort of reminds you why you bother to go to football, actually. Football's become this uber policed, overthought, very restrictive. I mean, there's few sports and few of entertainment events that you would go to where your, dare I say, your human rights are just eroded before you, and you're completely complicit in it and think it's normal when you stand back and actually, you know, I would go as far to say as 99%, if not almost 100% now, of people who attend football matches are law-abiding. You know, you'd struggle to commit an offence in a football ground now and not CCTV, blah-de-blah-de-blah. You look at the restrictions of, you know, travelling football fans, particularly for league clubs, and it's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers.
Well, it's like the Grimsby fan who infamously, I think he hit a steward on the head with an inflatable shark or inflatable fish as a joke. And he got prosecuted for it, and they were trying to ban him for it.
I mean, we'd have all been banned against that Newcastle United game. You know, the Villa Park with all the flying cocks. I mean, it'd have been done for... You've been on a register as well as in bloody court.
Yeah, no, it's. I don't think the game's going to get any better, put it that
way. I think it's made up. I do think it's made up. It harks back to the old 80s stuff.
When you go to most European games, you still get a legit experience. I mean, last season I went to a couple of games in Germany, and it was a...
You went to the Olympia Stadium,
like,
didn't you?
It didn't feel like your civil liberties were being stripped from you as soon as you walked into the game. I mean, you could have a beer in your seat and stroll around. I mean, there was people smoking weed in the stadium as well. So smoking cigarettes as well. And, you know, it's like life as it used to be before it got completely sanitized.
Yeah.
Right. We'll check out at this point. So support the ladies' game.
Yeah.
In fact, eventually, within about 10 years, it'll be better than the men's. So that's why, to answer your question, Richard. Yeah. Anyway, until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Won 18 minutes. Kavaris played a ball across towards McCarthy. He didn't want it. McCarthy's cleared it and it's come back to Villa, and it's just a tapping. So we're 1 minute, we're back at game. Next we're not. 3-1. And that's Urian. Conor Urian.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.